Cracco, Italy is one of the world's most famous ghost towns. Perched on a hill in southern Italy, the place has abandoned buildings that have become an iconic image of a place frozen in time. But unlike many abandoned towns, Cracco wasn't destroyed by war or volcanic eruption. Instead, a combination of unstable geology, engineering problems, and natural disasters gradually forced its residents to leave. Today, Cracco is known for its striking skyline, appearances in major films, and the ghost stories that surround its empty streets. In this episode, we'll explore the town's history, what life was like before it was abandoned, and the events that led to the evacuation, and the legends that continue to draw visitors from around the world today. Welcome in to the Ominous Archives. What's going on, everyone? I am Nick.
And I'm Em.
And this week we are diving back into some ghost towns. Well, ghost town. Like we said, this one sits in southern Italy, in the region of Basilicata, in the province of Matera. It's about 25 miles inland from the Gulf of Taranto.
And it wasn't built on flat ground. The town sits on top of a narrow hill, roughly 1,300 feet above sea level,
which gives Cracco a view over the valleys and farmlands below for miles in nearly every direction.
And that height wasn't an accident either. In the Middle Ages, a hilltop like that was valuable. You could see an army coming before it reached you. You could watch the roads, the trade routes. Anyone moving through the region had to pass in view of the town.
And the land at the base of the hill was fertile, so there was good farming. The hill gave good protection, and the ground beneath it gave the town a reason to stay.
For centuries, that combination worked. The area around Cracco had been inhabited long before the town existed. Ancient Greek colonies had influence there. Later, Byzantine control. But the first reliable written records of Cracco itself go back to around the 11th century, shortly after the Norman conquest of southern Italy.
That's when the settlement started becoming something more permanent, a fortified community.
Walls went up, a watchtower, churches became the center of everything. Religious life, community life, all of it was happening around them.
Noble families built residences there, and the economy that formed around the town was built on wheat, olives, and livestock.
And like most of medieval Italy, it operated under a feudal system, local lords controlling the land and people working it.
And by the late Middle Ages, Cracco wasn't a small outpost anymore. It was a thriving hilltop town.
It was the kind of place that looked like it would still be standing 500 years later.
Nobody looking at Cracco at that point would have guessed how it was going to end.
Because the threat wasn't an invading army. It wasn't a political conflict. It wasn't anything happening above ground at all.
It was already underneath them, in the hill itself. So underneath the stone buildings of Cracco was a foundation of clay-rich soil.
Which sounds like a small detail, but it isn't. Clay-rich soil behaves differently depending on how much water is in it. It expands when it's saturated, and it shrinks when it dries out.
So the ground itself was never really stable. The rain came, the soil expanded. Dry seasons came, it shrank back down.
And that cycle, repeated over centuries, wears at a hillside. Erosion, gravity pulling at slopes that are already weakened, landslides become less of a possibility and inevitability.
But nature wasn't the only thing working against the town.
As the population grew, more strain went onto that same hillside. Aging water pipes, leaking sewer systems, all of it letting more water seep into ground that was already unstable.
Construction changed landscape too. Excavation, building, and centuries of farming altered how water moved and drained across the hillside.
None of those things on their own would have doomed the town.
But together, slowly, they made the hill less and less capable of holding what was built on top of it.
And people noticed, long before anything catastrophic ever happened.
Cracks were spreading through stone walls, the streets were shifting, the foundations of homes and public buildings showing movement that hadn't been there before.
The kind of change that happens slowly enough that people adjust to it. You live with a crack in the wall, and you get used to a street that isn't quite level anymore.
But officials and engineers were watching those same signs and growing concerned. Because slow movement in a hillside doesn't always stay slow.
In 1963, it didn't.
A major landslide hit Caraco that year, damaged large sections of the town, entire neighborhoods were declared unsafe practically immediately.
And the conclusion authorities reached wasn't that the town could be repaired. It was that repairing would be harder than simply moving everyone out.
So the Italian government began organizing an evacuation. Families were relocated to a new settlement built nearby, Caraco Peschiera.
But this wasn't people leaving overnight. It happened gradually over several years, as more of the town kept becoming unsafe to live in.
And the landslide wasn't the end of it either.
In 1972, severe flooding hit the region, more damage to a landscape that was already fragile.
Then in 1980, Erpira earthquake, one of the most powerful earthquakes to hit southern Italy in decades.
It didn't cause Caraco to be abandoned, that had already happened by then, but it confirmed something. It reinforced every concern anyone had about the stability of what was left standing.
It really ended any hope that people would ever move back to Caraco.
So by the time all of it was finished, the landslide, the flood, the earthquake, Caraco had become something most people never actually witnessed in their own lifetime.
A town where the buildings were still there, still standing.
But the town itself was gone.
Oral histories from former residents describe the evacuation in a specific way. Not as one event, not as a single day everyone remembers.
A process. Something that unfolded slowly enough that it didn't feel like a single moment you could point to.
Families packed their belongings and locked their doors behind them.
Many of them believing at the time that they'd come back. That all of this was just temporary.
Some residents remember watching their neighbors leave first. One family, then another. The town thinning out gradually rather than emptying all at once.
Others describe the feeling of the streets themselves changing, getting quieter each month. Fewer voices, fewer lights on at night.
It's almost like that that one town. I don't know if we covered it yet. We might have talked about it. There's this one house in like this like valley area of the forest, and the doctor and his wife moved in, and he had to go back to the city, and when he came back, his wife was
We did talk about this. His wife was like crazy.
Something was coming to get her. It's almost like that. They're like slowly leaving. The history of that town was the same way, except they had like wild problems. I guess they had water problems too, but. And then at one point in the town, there were no lights on at all.
And many of those same former residents went back years later.
Some brought their children. They wanted to show them where they grew up, where their own childhood happened.
Others went back just to see what was left of their homes, what the hillside had done to the place that they used to live.
By then, these buildings have gone silent, but the memories were still alive.
And that's still true today. People born in Caraco, people who have lived somewhere else for decades now, still call it their hometown.
Not Caraco Peschiera. Not the new town built on the stable ground nearby.
Caraco the hill, the place that they had to leave.
And once people left, something else moved in. Not literally, but stories.
Caraco is known today almost as much for its legends as for its actual history.
None of them are verified, and none of them are provable. It's right up our alley.
But they became part of the town's identity anyway, and they're a big reason paranormal investigators, historians, and curious travelers still make the trip out to that hillside.
One of the oldest legends centers on a specific district, Kenzenere.
Local folklore describes a tavern there run, according to the story, by a witch.
An enchanting woman. She lured tired travelers inside with her beauty, her singing, and her charm.
And once they were inside, she cast spells on them.
And depending on who's telling the story, and this is the detail that shows up most often, turned into vinegar.
Which sounds strange until you understand the broader tradition it comes from. Southern Italian folklore is full of symbolic punishments, bizarre transformations. This isn't out of place there. It's actually fairly typical of the region.
Historians have found no evidence that a woman like this ever actually lived in Caracco.
But the story has been passed down through generations of local oral tradition regardless.
And it fits inside something much larger than just one tavern story. Throughout Basilicata and the surrounding regions, people believed in the Masseri.
Women said to possess supernatural abilities.
But not in the way modern horror movies usually portray witches. The Masseri occupied a much more complicated place in village life.
Some were respected. Healers, midwives, women who could lift curses, prepare herbal remedies.
Others were feared, blamed for illness, bad luck, crop failures, and deaths that didn't have any other explanation.
I think that was just the times back then. If they couldn't figure out what an explanation for something, mm-hmm. It was either, blame the witches.
Yep, you're a witch. And if your name was Samantha?
It was an S. It was definitely, I wanted to say Sarah or something like that.
I think it was Sarah. I think you're right, it was Sarah. Yeah. If your name was Sarah.
It was definitely an S, though.
Mm-hmm. You were a witch. They just didn't like S names back then.
Wild. Whether a Masseri was seen as a protector or a threat usually depended entirely on who was telling the story about her.
And these beliefs were woven into rural life for centuries, which made it easy for something like the Tavern Witch legend to take root in Caracco specifically.
And over time, that folklore gave the abandoned town a nickname of its own.
The City of Witches.
Religion plays a role in Caracco's reputation too. Not folklore this time, something more official.
The Chiesa Madre di San Nicola, a church dating back to the 14th century, once the center of a whole community.
For generations, it held the relics of San Vincenzo Martire, the town's patron saint.
According to the church records and local tradition, those relics were brought to Caracco in the 18th century. They became the focus of annual processions, festivals that pulled the entire community together year after year.
Relics like that were never meant to frighten anyone. They were meant as a reminder of faith, of sacrifice.
But a mummified body inside an abandoned church has a very different effect now than it did centuries ago, when the town was still alive around it.
After the evacuation, most of the religious statues and furnishings were moved to the new church in Caracco Pescara for safekeeping.
The old church stayed behind. It became a part of the abandoned landscape.
And there's a miracle attributed to San Vincenzo too. Local tradition holds that in the late 18th century, people from a neighboring town tried to steal his relics at night.
And according to that legend, the reliquary suddenly became too heavy to carry. The thieves had no choice but to abandon it before they could actually get it away.
When residents recovered it, they believed they heard the saint himself, telling them to carry him home to celebrate his return with music.
Whether that's history or a legend, it's still retold by the descendants of the people who used to live there.
The modern ghost stories are a lot less grounded than any of that.
Visitors report footsteps echoing through empty alleyways, the church bells ringing when there's no service scheduled, and whispered voices that carry on in the wind.
Shadowy figures appearing in windows and then disappearing just moments later.
Others have described unexplained lights moving between the buildings after the sun goes down.
None of it verified, but common enough and reported often enough that it's reinforced Krakow's reputation as one of the most haunted places in Italy.
Which has drawn paranormal investigators for years. Italian television programs, independent ghost hunting groups, online investigators.
All walking those same streets with infrared cameras, digital voice recorders, electromagnetic field meters, thermal imaging equipment, you name it.
And some claim to have captured EVPs.
Others report sudden cold spots, equipment just malfunctioning without explanation, the feeling of being watched while walking through the ruins.
None of it has produced anything independently verified. Nothing accepted by the broader scientific community.
Intriguing, inconclusive, same as most places like this.
And there are ordinary explanations available, too, if you're looking for them.
Empty stone buildings create strange acoustics. Sound definitely behaves differently in them. Distant noises can seem much closer than they actually are.
With the wind moving through broken windows, narrow alleyways, roofless structures, it can produce whistles, knocks, low tones that can sound almost like voices, or almost like footsteps, maybe.
And the light changes constantly there, especially in the early mornings and late evenings when Krakow gets misty. That kind of light definitely plays tricks, creates the illusion of movement when there isn't any.
Add in the silence of a town where nobody's supposed to be living.
And it's easy to understand why people leave convinced they experienced something they can't explain.
Whether that's a restless spirit or just the mind interpreting an unfamiliar place.
That's up to whoever's standing there to decide.
What isn't up for debate is that Krakow streets still pull at the imagination, the same way they did the day the last residents locked their doors and walked away. Krakow's abandoned skyline hasn't just drawn historians and paranormal investigators. It's become one of Italy's most recognizable filming locations.
Empty stone streets, medieval architecture, a dramatic hilltop setting. Filmmakers can recreate almost anything there without relying on special effects.
Its most famous appearance came in 2004, The Passion of the Christ. Mel Gibson used Krakow to portray parts of ancient Jerusalem.
A few years after that, it showed up in the James Bond film Quantum of Solace, standing in for a remote, desolate location during one of the action sequences.
It's also appeared in King David, Christ Stopped at Ebola, The Nativity Story, numerous documentaries about abandoned places, Italian history, the paranormal.
Part of why it's so appealing to filmmakers is that so little of it has been modernized.
Unlike historic towns that get restored with contemporary materials, Krakow has stayed frozen, largely as it was.
Production crews have to work inside strict preservation guidelines. Nothing about the historic structures can be altered or damaged.
Temporary sets do go up, equipment does come in, and once filming wraps, it all comes back out again. The town's left much the way it was before production started.
Those same preservation efforts extend to tourism too.
Because a lot of buildings are still structurally unstable, decades of landslides, earthquakes, and exposure to the elements, visitors just can't go and walk through them on their own.
Access is limited to guided tours. Certain areas are permanently off limits. There's fallen masonry, unstable ground.
It protects the visitors and it protects the town.
So Krakow's history can keep being studied, experienced for as long as possible.
You can visit Krakow too, but there are limits to people who can visit.
The original town isn't open for unrestricted exploration because of the ongoing risk. Landslides, unstable buildings, falling debris. Visitors have to join a guided tour.
Those tours follow designated routes through the safest parts of town. And some actually require hard hats while you're inside the ruins.
Large sections remain closed to the public entirely for safety.
And these restrictions aren't about trying to restore Caraco. Nobody's trying to rebuild it into some modern attraction.
The goal is to stabilize what's left of it, protect its character, nothing more than that.
Engineers are still monitoring the site, and conservationists work to slow the deterioration without changing how the town really looks.
And here's a detail that surprises a lot of people who hear about Caraco for the first time.
It isn't completely gone.
The original hilltop settlement is abandoned, but the community itself, the people, they're still there.
Most former residents relocated to Caraco Pesquera, the newer town built close by on ground that's actually stable.
So today, if someone tells you they live in Caraco,
they're usually talking about that new town, not the ruins on the hill.
In that sense, Caraco was never really erased.
It just kind of moved. So, Caraco is easy to describe as a ghost town, but that label only tells part of the story. Neither a single disaster nor an unexpected mystery caused its abandonment. Instead, it was the result of centuries of living on unstable ground where geology slowly shaped the town's future as much as policies or economics ever did. Throughout history, people have often built communities in places that offered immediate advantages, defenses, fertile farmland, and or access to trade without fully understanding the long-term risks. Caraco is one of the clearest examples of how those choices can echo across generations. Yet even after its residents left, Caraco was never truly forgotten. Former residents and their descendants continue to visit, share memories, and preserve traditions tied to the town. For them, Caraco isn't just a collection of abandoned buildings, it's home. That emotional connection is one reason preservation efforts remain so important. Caraco is certainly an interesting tourist destination, but it's more important to preserve the history of the people who live there and ensure their stories aren't lost as the buildings continue to age. After nearly 1,000 years of history, Caraco stands as both a historical record and a reminder of how quickly circumstances change. We know why the town was abandoned, and we can trace the landslides, floods, and earthquakes that sealed its fate. At the same time, the empty streets have given rise to ghost stories, tales of witches, and accounts of unexplained encounters that continue to capture people's imaginations. Whether you believe those stories or not, they have become part of Caraco's legacy, alongside the documented history. Perhaps that's why ghost towns fascinate us so deeply. Their mystery doesn't come from a lack of information. It comes from knowing that real people once filled those streets with ordinary lives, working, celebrating, raising families, and believing they would always be there. Caraco reminds us that while buildings can be abandoned, history rarely is. The people may be gone, but their stories continue to echo through the stone streets they left behind. This episode was written up for us by Samantha from Scare Me Sam. If you're interested in a horror or thriller themed book, go check out her podcast. She does great work for us, obviously, and great work for herself. If you enjoyed today's episode, always tell a friend. Tell a friend, tell a friend. All that fun stuff. And what else should I do? Oh, yeah. Go visit our social medias. I think it's time for bed. These late night recordings are rough. So, with all that being said, until next time. stay weird, and stay haunted. See ya.
See ya.